Okay, good afternoon. So today we came back to a set of slides which we did already employ 1 month ago regarding digital signal processing and application of digital signal processing related to convolution, digital filtering and fast Fourier transform. In the presentation done 1 month ago, we were very quick and not explaining you really why the things, the reason for the operation of this algorithm. Today we try to go more in depth and to understand what is behind this well-known algorithm. So it is like driving a car or understanding how the engine works. We did already learn how to drive the car, and today instead we learn how the engine of the car is operating. At this point, we come back to the concept of sampling. We go quickly over the things which we did already explain and stay more on the things which need more explanation. We know that sampling the sound or in general any kind of signal is done by measuring the value of this electrical signal with a constant sampling rate, and in audio application we employ a sampling frequency which is typically around 44 kHz or more, because we need to cover the complete audio range. And we employ a number of bits of digital units for representing the number which we are measuring, the voltage actually which we are measuring, and typically the converters, the analog to digital converter employed for audio and acoustics, range between 16 and 24 bits, while 24 is a dream. In reality, the best converter today capture more or less 22 decibels. The last two less significant bits are just noise. So it's impossible really to employ a 24-bit converter. This limits the dynamic range which is available. Locking the sampling in time and in amplitude force the value to stay over a grid which is discrete along time and is discrete also along amplitude. So if the real waveform was this one, the sampled waveform will be the red one, which is connecting points which are over this grid, and this causes an error which is called the sampling error. This error can be minimized with a series of tricks, and today we are discussing these tricks. The first very important trick is to employ a large enough sampling rate. In practice, if we want to minimize this kind of error, we need to comply with the Shannon theorem, and so we need to employ a sampling frequency which is at least twice the largest frequency in our signal. As for audio, the largest frequency which we are interested in is 20 kHz. We need to sample at least at 40 kHz. But no one impedes to the microphone to capture electrical disturbance or some kind of noise which can happen to be at higher frequency. We don't hear it, but the microphone senses this high frequency signal. So for avoiding the problem with the presence of these signals, what we need to do is to apply an analog low-pass filter before the conversion unit. And this is called the anti-aliasing filter. And this is what you did learn 1 month ago about this problem. Today, we are employing one of these normal sampling rate. In particular, we will employ the frequency of 48 kHz, and I will try to show you what happens when you invalidate the Shannon theorem. when you cause aliasing and how the aliasing sound, because the aliasing effect is in reality quite strange. So I now stop the presentation, I open an editing software like Adobe Audition, and we try to cause the aliasing, to force the aliasing to happen. So we start with a sine sweep, for example, which is a good example of a signal. We employ a sampling rate of 48 kHz, and we generate a sweep between, say, 4,000 and 24,000. So we span the high frequency range until the Nyquist frequency, which is half the sampling rate, with a linear sweep, for example, 15 seconds long with a 5 second with a 5 second silence gap at the end. Not enough memory. What? Sorry. Start again. This should not happen. File new 48 mono. Ok. Generate sine sweep 15 second 4,000 24,000 number of cycle 1. Ok, that was the problem, sorry. Ok, so we have this linear sweep in which the frequency increase progressively up to 24 kHz. Let me listen to it. After a while it should disappear. For me it's already done, but you perhaps can hear close to the limit, not to the limit, because at 24 kHz no one can hear what happens here. So this signal is not aliased currently, because we are working with a sampling frequency, 48 kHz, which is twice the maximum frequency of this signal, which is 24. So we sample at 48 for being able to record or to play a signal going up to 24. What happens if we reduce the sampling rate? So we have a waveform now, we can look at the waveform in more detail, and if we zoom in, the waveform is made by samples, okay? Is a sequence of single value. There is no line connecting them. The software is showing you this line, but this is an invention, it's not true. The true information is only those square things here. These are the data being stored in the computer memory. So what happens is that we will now keep one sample every two. So we keep this one and we throw away this. We keep this and throw away this one. We keep this and throw away this one, and so on. This kind of process is called decimation. Decimation does not mean to take one sample every 10. It's a general word which means taking one sample every n, where n can be 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, and so on. It's always called decimation. In this case, this is a decimation with a decimation ratio or fraction of 2. It means one sample yes, one sample no, one sample yes, one sample no. At the end of this process, we will end up with a waveform which has only 24 kHz of sampling rate. Now the sampling rate is 48, we halve the sampling rate, keeping one sample yes and one sample not. For doing that, we have this convert sample type subroutine, but this kind of decimation is done employing an anti-aliasing filter. So if we now tell the software to reduce the sampling rate from 48 to 24, by default, the software apply a pre and post filter. And employing this pre and post filter, the aliasing is suppressed. What happens in practice is this, perhaps I have to select the whole, okay. Add convert sample type, 24 kHz. We keep the anti-aliasing filter on, and what, sorry, I made it stereo. Edit convert sample type mono. You see that this sweep was 15 seconds long. Now this sweep is only 6 seconds long. Why? Because the high frequency has been cut away. If we look in frequency domain, now the sweep goes up to the new Nyquist limit, which is 12 kHz, and there is nothing above or below or after or later, because the sweep wanted to continue up to 24 kHz, but it cannot, and then the anti-aliasing filter simply suppressed the signal above 12 kHz. So the anti-aliasing filter was effective in avoiding the aliasing. Now, we undo this, so we have back our original sweep going up to 24 kHz, and we make again the conversion without the anti-aliasing filter. Without the anti-aliasing filter, something bad should happen. And this is what happens. The part which was going up above this horizontal line here, this is the mirror. The Nyquist frequency is also called the mirror frequency. It's like a mirror which reflects back what happens above it. So the sweep wanted to go up along this line, but it cannot because the maximum frequency is now 12 kHz, so it's reflected, is mirrored back, and this is the aliasing. Let me try to listen to it. Oh, sorry, I have to start from the beginning. It's going up to the limit, and then it's going back. The amplitude is going down, but for 4-5 kHz, between 6,000 and 12,000, you can still hear the aliased signal, which is reflected back in the low frequency range. So whenever you employ analog to digital system which does not employ proper anti-aliasing filters, this effect occurs. So let me look to the situation in terms of spectrum and not of sonogram. Look at what happens here. We start again from the beginning. Let me use a linear view. The frequency is going up. It reached the limit, and then it bounced back. Boing! And it comes back. This is aliasing. Okay? So, the aliasing is the reflection of the spectral content above the Nyquist frequency, the Nyquist limit, which is reflected back below this maximum frequency possible. So if the original spectrum did contain, let me make another example. Start again. We now create a signal made with just 2 tones. Start again at 48 kHz, and we generate a signal containing a peak at 5 kHz and a peak at 15 kHz. So a third order component, which is 3 times the frequency. Okay? So now the signal contains 2 pure tones. It's a bit short. Let me make it longer. Sorry. a bit short, yeah, let me make it 5 seconds long. Okay, if we now look at the spectrum of this signal, we have two peaks, you see. One peak at 5 kHz and one peak at 15 kHz. When we now reduce the sampling rate to half, so the new Nyquist limit, instead of being 24 kHz, will be back to 12, this second peak should not appear anymore. If we apply the anti-aliasing filtering, it will be killed completely, disappear. But if we don't apply the anti-aliasing filter, this peak here will be mirrored back. At exactly which frequency will be mirrored? This is a typical question done during the exam for seeing if the guy did understand what is aliasing. Compute the frequency at which the mirrored component will appear. So the new Nyquist limit will be 12,000. The peak is at 15,000, so it is 3,000 Hz above the limit. It will come back 3,000 Hz below the limit. So 12 minus 3 means 9 kHz. Let me see if this is true. We convert the sampling rate to 24 kHz sampling rate, so the limit for the Nyquist frequency will be 12 kHz. We make the conversion without anti-aliasing filter. So the worst way. And the peak is there. Now, the original peak is still at 5 kHz. Now the scale is doubled, because the new limit is 12 kHz. The original peak at 5 kHz is still there. And this peak, which was at 12 kHz, now it appears at 9 kHz. Now we can play the aliased sound. And the original. Well, the note is the same. In a musical sense, the fundamental is always the same, because there is no difference. The fundamental is this. This is a third order harmonics. When it comes back at 9 kHz, it becomes 1.5 order harmonics, but it is still an harmonic of the fundamental. So your hearing system still perceives the same note, only the timbre is changed. But if we now suppress the original low frequency, employing, for example, the filtering tool of audition, there is a scientific filters. Okay, and we can employ an high pass, and let me place the high pass at 9 kHz. It will kill everything below 9 kHz. So now the original 5 kHz tone is gone. This high pass filter did destroy the low frequency information. So we now can hear only the high frequency 12 kHz tone. Do you hear it? For me, not audible anymore. I cannot reach 12 kHz. You are young, probably you can hear that. When you convert it back to 24 kHz sampling rate, performing this aliasing, now the sound is there. So, in practice, you made audible something which was not audible. This is quite typical when you operate with a normal frequency, like for example 48 kHz, but without a proper anti-aliasing filter. There is some electronic equipment, some surveillance system employing ultrasonics, which make a lot of noise at high frequency, which you don't normally hear. After recording with a digital system without proper anti-aliasing filter, you get this noise mirrored back in the audible range. So you start hearing things which were not audible before. The first time I have seen this was with the dolphins. You know that dolphins use calls, the calls of dolphins are ultrasonics. Usually you cannot hear the sound of the dolphin underwater. If you make the recording of a dolphin with an old generation digital recorder, the sound of dolphins becomes audible. But it's reversed. The typical call of dolphin is whipping up, it's made yup, yup, yup. Instead, if you hear recorded with aliasing, it makes the opposite. Ooh, ooh, ooh. And people was thinking that this was the real call of the dolphin, because they were hearing the aliasing version. So if something was waking up, now it's whipping down. You see it very well with this chart here. Now, it was whipping up, but you hear whipping down. So it does not only reflect the sound inside the audible range, but it swaps high with low frequency. So it's evilly distorted, this aliasing sound. It's terrible. In a musical sense, it's terrible. You are making a scale going up on the piano, and you hear it reversed back. Okay, because it swapped the axis, the frequency axis is reversed in practice in the aliasing sound. So it is a very nasty effect. You need to avoid it completely, and that's the reason for which the anti-aliasing filter needs some frequency space to work. In this case, it was a very difficult job for our anti-aliasing filter, because we asked to measure the sound only up to 12 kHz, and there was significant sound close the Nyquist frequency. So you need an anti-aliasing filter within frequency domain. It's like a brick wall, is like a filter, like a low pass in this case, which comes down as abruptly as possible. But it's not easy to create a filter which is so sharp in frequency domain. The sharper is the filter, the better is its frequency response, you could say, the more accurate is its frequency response, the worse it will be in time domain. This is again the time frequency interrelationship. Something good in frequency domain is bad in time domain. Something good in time domain, something bad in time... Okay, you have understood. Let me check this. So, we now create... Okay, I have now applied this filter cutting down. If we go in time domain, apparently, it smoothed down the waveform amplitude without any relevant effect. But this was a steady-state signal. It's easy for a filter to process a continuous sine wave. It's the easiest signal to process. The problem is with transient, with impulse, with percussion. Let me try to create a pulsive signal. So we generate silence, 10 seconds, even too much, but okay. Then we zoom in. At a certain point, we get one sample and we bring it up to full scale. This kind of waveform is called the Dirac delta function. It is a theoretical model of a perfect impulse. and is the concept which is the basis of the impulse response. If you play this signal, what you record is the impulse response by definition, because this is the impulse. 0000001 0000000. Okay? Now, what happens if we apply the anti-aliasing filter to this impulse ideal impulse? Effects, filters, scientific filters. We want to cut at 9 kHz, for example, with order 20. See what happens. It happens that the peak is not a peak anymore. The impulse is not an impulse anymore. It becomes longer. Now you have to zoom in for seeing the effect, but you already start seeing, oh, what an horrible thing. It's not anymore one sample different from zero and all the other are zero. This effect is called ringing, like the bell of the door. This filter is ringing, and the sharper is the filter in frequency domain, the longer it will ring in time domain. This was a 20 order filters in frequency domain. Let me make a longer filter, more sharp. We apply again the filter, more rapid, for example, an order 60. Now it is much more vertical, the cut of the filter. It's like a brick wall filter, really vertical. But now, in time domain, it will become longer. The larger the filter order, the filter order is the number of filtering stage. We will see it in a moment. In any case, the steeper is the cutout in frequency domain, the longer will be the ringing in time domain. And there is a limit at which the filter goes crazy, actually. We did not reach this filter this limit again yet. In the previous slide, there were 3 or 4 oscillations. Now there are perhaps 15 before the ringing extinguished down. And the sharper the filter in time in frequency domain, the worse will be this ringing effect in time domain. Such ringing effect is again a very nasty effect. You hear it, particularly during transient. If you have a recording of a percussion like batteria, this kind of percussive instruments, or hand claps, or any kind of recording which contains sharp sound, strong peaks, they are smeared out in time, causing a lot of audible, it's not really delay, it's like reverb, it's like adding reverberation, okay? Because you are smearing energy in time domain. This is bad. And how you can avoid this? Employing a less steep filter. Employing a filter which is not so sharp falling down. For example, just a filter of order 10, which is now much more gentle, but such a filter requires more space in frequency before the signal has went to zero. More space means that this filter, as you see, cannot be used anymore for reducing the sampling rate to 24 kHz with an IQ frequency of 12. Because at 12 kHz the signal is not zero, it's still there, so it's not attenuated enough. So what you need to do to reduce the corner frequency from 9 kHz perhaps to 6 kHz. If you do that, everything shifts left. So it starts cutting earlier and now at 12 kHz it is zero. So now is effective for removing aliasing, and is gentle in time domain. In fact, if we look at the time domain waveform now, it will have barely one or two ringing, you see. After a very small number of oscillation, it goes to zero, but still there are oscillations. If you want to reduce the most possible this kind of ringing, you need to use a very slow and gentle filter. In terms of frequency, of sampling frequency, this means to employ a much larger sampling frequency. So instead of employing 44 or 48 kHz, which are the two traditional sampling frequency employed by the CD audio or the DAT recorder, those two require a hard job to be done by the anti-aliasing filter. For the CD audio is an almost impossible job, because you need to attenuate 80 decibel with a range for the filter of only 2 kHz. So it is a very, very steep filter, which causes a lot of ringing, and so the recording is bad. For the DAT, the situation is already better, because we have now 4 kHz for the operation of the anti-aliasing filter, from 20 to 24. So you double the space available, you reduce it to half the slope of the filter, and in practice, perceptually, the quality is doubled. So, even if the frequency did only increase from 44 to 48, the perceived improvement in quality is a doubling in quality of the digital recording, because you double the space allowed for the filter to work. But now we can use, for example, the DVD audio, which employ 96 kHz, so you have now a lot of space for the anti-aliasing filter. More or less you have 24 kHz available for the roll-off of the filter, which make the filter very, very gentle in frequency domain and very, very short in time domain. So with this kind of sampling frequency, you preserve the sharpness in time domain, the crispness, and the transient capability, the punchiness of the percussion, will boom, give you really the effect of a rapid percussion, which is lost with traditional digital recording system. So the higher the frequency, the better is the effect in time domain. People did explain the advantage of employing high sampling rate with a wrong explanation. They did tell you, so you have a larger frequency range available. But no one can hear above 20 kHz. So there is no point in having a larger frequency range, a very high frequency limit. There is no advantage, no perceived advantage. The perceived advantage is due to a more gentle anti-aliasing filter. That's the reason for which the DVD audio sounds so much better than the CD audio. Okay? Then there is another point, which we did not discuss before, but is very important for music. Well, what is nice? This is an ethical question, an aesthetical question. In terms of sound, a nice sound is simply a sound which is judged nice, which people tell, this sounds nice. And people tell you that they like the sound when what they hear conforms to their expectation. So the answer, what is a nice sound, depends in the end on the expectation of the people, of what they are trained and used to listen. After 30 years of exposition to the sound of CD audio, many people are used to the distortion and the artifact of the CD audio. When the CD audio was first introduced, audiophiles did hate it because it did sound really bad compared to old analog recording on the big reel tapes, which was the reference for the time, and is still the reference in a recording studio. So the original analog master of a performance, for example, of the Beatles, was recorded on this 1-inch magnetic tape, big reel, incredibly good quality, incredibly fast response to transient, all analog. So that was the reference. Compared to that, the CD was really bad. Nevertheless, it was so practical and so cheap to manufacture that it had a great commercial success. And nowadays, most people have learned, since when they were children, to listen to music reproduced by CD audio. So what were originally considered problems and artifacts now are part of the game. You are used to this kind of artifact. When you lose this artifact, because going to the DVD audio, you are back to the same good quality of the original analog master. Now people are not so happy. So they did complain when from the analog master they were exposed first to the CD audio. But in the end, people is now used to the artifacts of CD audio. And now you remove these artifacts and give you back them the original clean signal, and they are not happy again, because people want to listen what they are used to listen. That is the end of the equation. Then someone did understand that this also applied to compressed sound. Here we are dealing with sound which is recorded the best as you can. And this requires a lot of memory. Increasing the sampling rate and increasing the bit depth, the number of bits employed for recording, means that for recording an hour of music, you require several gigabytes of data. So it becomes expensive in terms of storage, it becomes impractical in terms of downloading from the internet. So people invented compressed audio, compressed music. The most famous compression algorithm is MP3. And you know, you can have a music recording and convert it to MP3. Now I try to open some music recording and try to convert it to MP3 for reducing the size of the file. Let me see if I have some recording. Okay. This one. Well, it's a problem because we have the piano on one channel and the voice on the other. Let me mix down to mono because I have only one microphone. Sorry, it's a stupid problem, but mono. Okay. Those loudspeakers are distorting a little, and this is a problem. In any case, this recording is a nice recording made at 48 kHz without any compression, and it is what we call consider the original. What happens, but this takes a lot of space on disk. If we save it as it is now, it takes a lot of space. For example, public acoustic. Okay. Let me see how large is the file. No, not here. this file is 6 megabytes, almost 7 megabytes. For a short recording like this is a lot. So what you can do? You can save it as a compressed MP3 file. We can choose the degree of compression, and in particular for music, this is the normal compression which is usually employed, 128 kilobit per second. If we do that, the recorded file now, where I did save the MP3, is not here, sorry. Yeah, it's there. So, why I don't see it here? It's this one. So it is more than 10 times smaller, you see. It was 7 megabytes and it is now less than 600 kilobytes. So there was a compression factor of 10 to 1 or 12 to 1. Quite good. The quality is still good enough. Some more distortion is there, but it is not terrible. We could reduce it even more. Well, there is the point that I need to save and reopen for really getting the effect of compression. Let me try. If we compress even more, the situation becomes quite bad. We now reduce the bitrate to the minimum possible. Okay, this one. With a compression factor 96, chiamiamolo 44B. Okay, let me close and reopen so we get the compressed version and see how it sounds. The S was gone completely. The situation now is quite bad. You already see it with the frequency analysis. The high frequency part of this is gone completely now. The sampling frequency has been reduced to 11 kHz and the situation is bad. So, whenever you do this kind of compression, you introduce a whole new generation of artifacts and distortion, which are quite complex to explain, because this kind of algorithms are not linear. So there is not a very simple explanation like the anti-aliasing filter with the ringing, which is a very predictable and very easy to model effect. The kind of artifacts done by MC3 compression are dependent on the material. As this is a not linear algorithm, the algorithm adapts itself to the signal. If the signal is simple, the algorithm has an easy task and does the work with little error. If you use a pure sinusoid like a test tone for measuring distortion, MP3 does not cause any distortion, even at maximum compression. If instead the signal is complex, like in this case, the situation becomes quite bad very easily. And in the end, you cannot really predict the kind of distortion you are going to get. You have only to test, because with every different recording, you will get a different distortion, which can be acceptable or not, depending on the source material. But what happens? That currently, most of you are used to listen to MP3 music, not even to CD audio. Most of you are used to download music pieces, songs and so on, from the internet, perhaps from pirate sites or from BitTorrent or Emule, and those kind of recording are really bad in terms of artifacts and distortion. But you are used to that. You think that this is how the music should sound, because you were never exposed to the original masters recorded in a recording studio. It's out of your reach. Even the original CD recording is probably out of your reach, because CDs are still expensive nowadays. So you cannot afford to buy a lot of CDs of music. You prefer to download it for free from internet. The quality is terrible, but you don't know. Don't have in the comparison with the original. You cannot judge how bad is the MP3 compared to the original. You don't have the original. And remember that the CD was already quite bad himself. Is the DVD audio or the original analog master which should be kept as a reference. But I don't think any one of you own a DVD audio, just one disc at home. Raise your hand if you have one DVD audio at your home. No one has them. So you don't know how good is the real recorded music, because you were never exposed to that. 50 years ago, having recorded music at home, it means to buy a big wheel recorder with a tape recorder. It was terribly expensive. Only few people could afford that. But recorded music was really good. Then the vinyl disc came. That was not possible to record, only to playback. It was less expensive. And many people was used to vinyl discs, which are already quite bad compared to the original magnetic tape. But this was available on the market in the 40s or in the 50s or at the beginning of the 60s. Already at the end of the 60s, at the beginning of the 70s, the first CD audio appeared. And then people was exposed to CD audio music. They learned that that was the reference. Even today, audiophiles prefer CD over DVD audio. This was one of the reasons of the commercial failure of DVD audio. People are used to CD audio music, audio file. So people who can spend money for buying discs, which are a minority nowadays, but they are still the only buyers of music, actually, because you are not giving any money to who produce music. You are downloading it for free, so you are out of the market. You are just leechers of the market, okay? So in the end, the music industry realized that there was no point giving back the good quality of DVD audio, because people were happy with CD. And nowadays people are happy with MP3. And company like Apple made a lot of money selling you crappy MP3 recording over iTunes. And nevertheless, they are making billions selling those overly distorted music, because people are used to that distortion and they are happy to pay 99 cents per song for buying from the Apple store, from iTunes. It makes no sense, but this is what's happening. So remember that when I talk about absolute quality, is something which has no relation with what is really happening in the market. And when you are going to work in a couple of years or something like that, probably the standard will be went even lower, because now music is going from the iPhone, from the iPod, or similar kind of devices, which are still good quality in terms of MP3 playback, to crappy plastic cellular phone made in China with horrible converters and horrible headphones, and that is what's on the market now. So most people nowadays are not buying anymore an iPod. They are just using their mobile phone for listening to music, with a quality which is even worse. So in 4 or 5 years, that will be the standard. the horrible music of the call of a cellular phone with those very crappy small loudspeaker. That will be the reference. It's sad for people who love music, like me, to seeing how, while the technology is improving, and in theory is possible now to get an incredibly good quality, this is not happening. Because people instead are going worse and worse and worse. And the quality available to audiophiles in the 50s with this big magnetic tape is not available anymore at home. No one at home has a sound system of such quality. Or if you have, it's so expensive that you must be a billionaire for having that. Okay, I think we can stop now for the first hour. Any question? Okay.